Welcome, David, to Christy Walk here where I live on unceded Kaurna land. We've done a few interviews before, but let's embark on another one.
Yes.
Zionism on the offensive.
Well, the events of October the 7th, regarding which the International Criminal Court of Justice has issued four mandates, two for Hamas officials and leaders with regard to those events. Events which I might note we don't really understand quite yet in historical terms, because firstly, how did they get through the fence, the border, one of the most policed in the world? And why all the atrocity porn, the false reports of beheaded babies and so on? We know from the Israeli coroner's office that they who deal very comprehensively with the bodies and fragments of the fallen, that they discovered no headed babies, beheaded babies. So why all the deceit and emotional propaganda? It's believed that some of the people died due to friendly fire. So really what happened on October 7th, we don't know. Anyway, the Israelis mobilised a retaliation, which is also a war crime, insofar as it's disproportionate, very quickly. Now, military in peacetime always develop contingency plans, and the Zionists in the Knesset, quite senior people, ministers and so on, had been talking up a final solution for the Palestinians for some time. And I knew a professor.
Final.
Well, essentially, they're going to do a final solution for the Palestinian question, as they said. I had a conversation with a professor of chemistry who was Palestinian here at the University of Adelaide, and I asked him, what do you think's next? And he just turned to me and he said, ethnic cleansing. And the only response I could muster, such was my shock, was to say, oh, I hope not. But now we've got it. So we had the rape of Gaza, which appears to be rolling on into its final phases, with the pummeling of the raiding and the bombing of civilian populations in Gaza, supposedly to kill Hamas operatives. Apparently Israeli targeting involves killing every member of Hamas, which is probably going to prove to be a bit hard to do, so there'll probably be a rump of Hamas that survives and will regrow. But at best, the civilians are regarded as collateral damage. We must remember that the Israeli Defence Force is built more or less totally for irregular warfare. A warfare that doesn't respect, for example, the distinction between combatants and civilians. The Israeli Defence Forces have never been in a battle with a equally well-led and armed and organised force. All of the Arab forces they've fought were militarily inferior from the get-go. But they're very good at killing civilians. They've been doing it since before 1948. So the question now is, how is this going to be encompassed? How far will this offensive go? Well, you have to understand that every military operation has an information war, a propaganda war built into it. And the Israelis are basically prosecuting a strategy of plausible deniability. If anybody reports anything that's really happening, they say, oh, well, that's not what happened, it was something else. this is wrong, that particular is not quite there, and so forth and so on. And it also involves the global and Australian Zionist organisations. Now, in Australia, the strategy, which is reinforced by the Murdoch press, is to silence pro-Palestinian free speech. The universities were obliged, more or less, to put up with the student encampments protesting the genocide. But they decided to withdraw and reorganise the university administrations, that is, in a second moment. And the strategy was that they would agree, each university of the group of eight, the most prestigious Australian universities, to make an example out of a symbolic student, the better to encourage the others to the appropriate understanding to shut up. I'm not aware of how the case at Adelaide Uni has ended, but I do know what the charges were. The charges were that the student concerned had violated, damaged university property. Now, the university property concerned was a garden bed where the soil had been sifted and an olive tree for peace planted. So to call this damaging property is a very, very long bow, after
what
all.
What was planted?
An olive tree. You know, those subversive symbols of peace. A very long bow to call that damage of property. And the other charge was that the student concerned had frightened other people. Now, A, that's to elevate the status of a purely subjective feeling. That's number one. And number two, the person concerned, she's of 158 centimetres. Her ability to frighten people, even by austere temperament, is entirely limited. And we know that for years, Zionist activists on campus, Zionist zealots, have made this argument that the presence of anti-Zionists on campus represents some sort of terror to them, and that any such representation of those Semites, the Palestinians, is frightening and anti-Semitic. Now, according to the Zionists, any criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic. This is to proceed in extremism to violate language itself. So these things are, these phenomena are occurring not only in the battlefield of Gaza, but they're also occurring in the battlefield of our hearts and minds here at the other end of the world.
What's the punishment for the student will face?
I don't know, but it's potentially anything. And anyone who's seen the film Oppenheimer, where he's processed by a committee which has no rules of evidence, will know what sort of interrogation she will have suffered, because it has actually occurred. There are no rules of evidence in that committee. She was not permitted to take in legal counsel in defence of her rights. Fortunately, she had legal advice, but she had to store that in her head and unpack it herself. Now, even a redoubtable young woman shouldn't be put into one of those situations, because potentially she could be fined or expelled from the university or whatever.
For having opinions.
For expressing them, yes. For expressing opinions in defence of the people who are suffering genocide. It's like It's interesting now that Australian conservatives feel so aligned with Zionism, because back in the days of the Jewish Holocaust, they didn't care about the Jews at all. The Australian government under Joe Lyons, a fellow Tasmanian, was dead set against receiving Jewish refugees at that time because they were considered poor, diseased and Jewish.
The language is very powerful too, isn't it? Everybody is pro, and the opposite to that is anti. Mm. And so why can't we all just be pro-peace?
And objective, a historian would say. Because life's not fair and there's no even playing field. If I can beat your argument, your contention, by being unfair and cutting you off at the ankles so that people don't listen to your appeal to reason, then there's always been plenty of people who will do that. And in fact, any person who wants to express an opinion under free speech in the public domain needs to be aware that they have to tackle unfair responses because it's just a fact of life.
And to make any commentary, you have to take sides.
Well, you don't necessarily, but someone else will consider that you have done. Mm. So you're not allowed to say...
And the reporting will say that you have done.
Well, the reporting has no historical perspective. I mean, essentially, the invasion of Palestine by Zionism goes back to the mid-19th century. You don't see a line written in the Australian that has any consciousness of that, any awareness at all. And they don't want anybody to understand that. And if somebody does understand it and starts recounting a perspective that responds to something more than the 24-hour news cycle, with its even-handed reporting of the truth-sayers and the liars, is referred to as anti-Semitic, which is a dreadful thing to say, because anti-Semitism is a fascistic philosophy.
Mm. When Professor Kamsia was here, he said Zionism in Australia, in South Australia particularly, was alive and well through Governor Gawler.
Yes, that would be right. That would be right. It was, in one of its aspects, the Zionism in Great Britain was a ruling class enthusiasm. Lord Shaftesbury, one of the famous Cooper family, spent much of his life promoting the notion that a Jewish European community should be established on Palestinian land.
Why there?
For biblical reasons. It had been the biblical homeland. In fact, the bulk of the Jewish population has European antecedents. The Kingdom of David lasted very little, maybe 70 years, I think. And the Palestinian Jewish community was always very small. So it would appear that Zionism, or Judaism's success, was with people in Eurasia, and that these European and Asian populations, by Asian I mean the other side of the Ural Mountains, were converted by their princes or by the attraction of the religion to Judaism, and thus became Jews, not through genetic determination and cultural determination in Palestine.
Is there a genetic determination?
There was a small Jewish community which propagated itself and propagated its culture and intermarried with other peoples, including Arabs, in the 6th century. So the Zionist narrative is that the Palestinians are interlopers from the 6th century. Well, that confers settlement rights anyway, that length of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also wrong. The Palestinians have been there for 4,000 years and preceded the ancient Hebrews, who the Bible tells us came into the land as conquerors. So they must have been second. There must have been someone there for them to conquer first off. But there was a small Palestinian Jewish community, historically, which had long links back to 3,000 years ago or so.
And that can be traced through DNA?
It has been traced through DNA.
Yeah. I wonder where all of this will end.
Well, it will end when the State of Israel has either enforced its final solution or has failed to. So it's necessarily something that hangs in the balance. The casualties in Gaza, something like, I can't remember, it's 47 or 87,000 casualties, but they are confirmed dead. That's where you've got the body, you've got all of the information about the body, and, you know, maybe even their boat license. The real toll is under the rubble. And apparently the procedure is to estimate the real toll by multiplying the confirmed toll by a factor of 4 to 15, depending on all sorts of other factors. If it were only 4 or 5 times, you'd be pushing towards 200,000. Remember, Israel has bombed a population of what was initially 2.3 million. The notion that one of the most fierce bombardments in human history, followed up by tank and infantry assault, has only killed, say, 40,000 people when it's levelled the landscape is just preposterous. And I think after this, after Gaza is finally suppressed, there could well be actions in East Jerusalem or the West Bank, because, you know, people have been dying in those places in resistance to what's going on now, knowing that they're next. Even the Galilee Basin, which has a large Palestinian population inside Israel, could be subjected to the final solution.
They're living in Israel?
Yes, they're second-class citizens, but, you know, they're living in Israel. They're doing better than people in the camps, but they're under security suspicion and the gun as well.
So there's agencies that work together.
Yes. Yeah, well, there's the World Zionist Federation in Jerusalem, I think, or it might be in Tel Aviv, I can't recall. And there's an Australian Zionist Federation. I'm not sure if that's the correct title, but it's some amalgam of those words. They've been issuing propaganda from day one. During this episode of slaughter. They're very well organised. They've been at the job for about 50 years. Initially, there was some resistance to the secular political notion of a state of Israel in Australia amongst Australian Jews. But as time went on, the Israeli state was able to mobilise support, and it became the general attitude by and large of the Jewish community, although there are very significant pockets of anti-Zionist resistance in the Jewish community.
What would be happening to the organisations in Israel now that were working toward a two-state solution, the schools, and where people could go, and the university?
Well, the Israeli government has said for years that it would not tolerate the existence of a Palestinian state. So those righteous Jews, to use the term that the Jews used about righteous Christians who supported them under Nazism, those righteous Jews would be feeling that the battle to realise cohabitation or peace with the Palestinian community has become a much more...
I find it hard to be honest. The why of it all is overcome with the... the emotion of... Mm. And
yeah, in a way, we mustn't surrender our emotions to the killers. We've got to be strong, and as the Palestinians say, our existence is resistance. And that's the note of hope. The dissenters, the people of peace, are the note of hope in the international situation and the situation in Palestine at the moment.
And do you have hope?
I always have hope that the unsustainable will not be sustained, and this is not a sustainable policy. The state of Israel is digging itself a bigger and bigger hole. Its international credibility is taking a lot of damage. There are a lot of people who are not particularly political now, who just don't like human slaughter. And they are forming opinions about the deep nature and the contemporary behaviour of the state of Israel.
Fancy that, people don't like human slaughter.
No, because it touches everyone, you know. If they can do that to them with impunity, in principle, they can do it to us. Mm. But there's another thing operating, and that's empathy. You know? Mm. When a herd of gazelles are obliged by the pace of the pursuing lions, or leopards, or whatever, to surrender the slower, the older, and the infirm, the herd is distressed by that. So empathy is a factor in nature. And I think human nature, to the extent that it's not perverted, experiences a similar phenomenon of emotion. So I think there's a lot of people feeling empathy for the Palestinians at the moment. And I believe that our allegedly Labour government, which has gone over to the dark side on this question, will suffer at the polls for it, because most people who vote Labour think that voting Labour is to assert certain values and policies and to address certain realities, and this government has failed to do it in socioeconomics and in foreign policy. So what will happen is that I think the Labour vote in the Labour constituency will fall. There will be independents, some of whom are Zionists, some of whom are not. Of course, there will be the senator from Western Australia who recently left the Labour Party in pursuit of Labour values. It's believed that a slate of candidates will be fielded around the country. So there'll be maybe a single-issue party primarily with a platform that encompasses things like the cost of living. And the next parliament could be a very good parliament where the balance depends on independence. Mm. And we've had good parliaments like that before.
Mm. I look forward to that.
Yes, so do I.
You look at that?
If you like, yes. Mm.